My reading today is John 16, 16 through 22. Hold it. Yeah.
That would be El Paso. Paso.
Yeah. John 16, 16 through 22. A little while, and you will no longer see me. And again, a little while, and you will see me. Some of the disciples said to one another, "What is this thing he is telling us? A little while, and you will not see me. And again, a little while, and you will see me. And because I go to the Father." So they were saying, "What is this that he says, a little while? We do not know what he is talking about." Jesus knew that they wished to question him, and that he said to them, and he said to them, "Are you deliberating together about this, that I said, a little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me? Truly, truly, I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will grieve, but your grief will be turned into joy. Whenever a woman is in labor, she has pain because her hour has come. But when she gives birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish because of the joy that a child has been born into the world. Therefore, I say to you, therefore, you too have grief now, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and no one will take your joy away from you."
Isn't that just like Jesus make promises he can keep? I don't know if anybody is zooming in, but I want you to know if you are, and you talk, we'll hear you. It'll be projected right here into this room. And if you're not, we won't hear you. Okay. So, joy. What is joy? Your daughter's no man. Oh,
you don't need to hear
okay, a couple of middle namers in here. What is joy?
It is a
no,
jubilant emotion that builds on.
no, it's not an emotion.
Let me ask it. Let me ask it differently. How does joy differ from happiness? They are okay, distinctly different.
They're close.
Right.
Have you ever noticed the relationship between happiness and happiness? It just happens. And something flares up. Oh, gee, I'm happy now. It happens to, yeah.
Happiness is often something that the world will take and give, but then they can take it away. Joy and knowing. Happiness is contingent on circumstance. Joy is there regardless of circumstance.
It almost says the way I want to hear it. Happiness is contingent upon circumstance. Joy is contingent upon relation.
Joy is different from fairness.
And we just saw what was going through. What was Jesus thinking when he said, "My joy I give to you"? What would he thinking? What was going to happen in the morning? Did he think he knew he was going to be crucified in the morning? Yeah, he did. And then he said, "My joy." You ever thought that one through? I mean, have you ever had a major surgery for the morning, and how do you feel the night before? apprehensive, right? Yeah, maybe scared. Yeah, asking everybody, you know, to pray for you. Okay, Jesus was going to the cross, and he was not going to live to that day, and he knew it. And he said, "My joy I give to you." In that day, okay, what was he giving them? How is it that he had joy the night of his crucifixion? And that's certainly not happiness.
But you have understanding.
What do you understand, Alan?
He understood why he was doing it.
Okay. Understood why he was doing it. Let's build on that. He understood why he was doing it.
The eternal purpose. The eternal purpose of God from the beginning, that Christ would die for him.
Okay. He realized that he was fulfilling God's purpose. Susan. Oh, how many people he was going to rescue. Yeah. Who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame. You know what despising means? Holding it in contempt. Sitting on it. Shame is nothing. It's nothing. And so he held the shame of the cross. I mean, Scott brought that up. The shame of the cross was, who went to a cross? And you're up there, bloody, naked, hanging on a cross because you devoured some of Jesus, that's nothing to me. I have the joy beyond that. Why do you have joy beyond the cross?
Same as preparing. Sacrifice their life for each child. You can say as if a parent was, you know, sacrificing a life for a child. They put the other, making a period of their own, their love that child, and that they're willing to do everything without regret.
I like that. But, you know, this kind of like taking up a diamond and say, why is it sparkling? Well, because of this face right here. Well, what about these other faces? I'm saying that there's a many faceted aspect of the joy we can have. And part of it is what we talked about here earlier, what we can do for others. What is it that John said? I think it's 3 John, but not the 2nd John. No greater
joy
do I have from this than to see my children walking in the street. No greater joy than to see my children walking in the street. That's amazing, isn't it? That the success of somebody else would fill John with joy. That's relationship right there. That's the well-being of other people right there. Okay? Why was Jesus filled with joy? I mean, the same question, only there's another answer that can be added. Not replaced, but added to it. Why was Jesus filled with joy the night before he died? It's kind of in the text. A little while you won't see me, and a little while you will see me.
He was looking to the future. He wasn't focused on the now,
okay,
or even tomorrow. He was looking,
okay,
past tomorrow.
Okay.
I think it would go back to Peter. It goes back that the Son of Man is going to be shown forth to be the Son of God.
What? Think of the 7 things that Jesus said on the cross, and one of them is really pertinent here. Father, into your hand I commit my spirit. Complete trust. This relationship in faith in you, that complete trust. I have joy because I know this is going to end up well. What's that passage in life? What was it? 28?
28.
What does that say?
For we know that God.
We know. We know. Not we hope. We know. This is going.
That God causes.
That God causes. He is the force here, not the swirling winds around. God causes.
All things.
Not just a few things.
No, you got me. Yeah. To work together for good.
who work together for God.
To those who love him.
And are called according to purpose. Intentionality in our relationship. And faithfulness of God. Is that not the basis of joy? Intentionality in our relationship and our relationship as he's got another thought here. He said, burning the hair right off the top of his head.
Jesus knew that he was about to fulfill the pinnacle of what all of creation had grown for since the beginning.
It is finished.
Now, no one here would argue that what Jesus went through was pleasant. It was horrible. And sometimes we focus on that as the horror of it. Because we could be guilty, we could be responsible, and we are. So he wouldn't have had to die if I hadn't had sinned, right? But wouldn't it be more powerful to focus on the joy he has in doing that? I'm doing this for you. And I'm going through this for you. People sometimes would donate a kidney or a loved one. I'm doing this for you, Mary.
Well, I was just looking at the last part. 22, I think, says it all. Says so much is not said. Therefore, you too have peace. And if you had peace, they might have joy, not usually excuses. And assures them that they will rejoice, and no one will take your joy from you. So it's something that is a detail, something too, that's the right word, and it's rooted, it is part of the foundational. It's not something that's fleeting. And we can have all these other emotions, sadness, fear, rejoicing, and still have joy.
Yeah.
You said something about focusing on the tragedy of the cross and not focusing on the joy. I think me personally, I don't know about anybody else, but when if I get to really focusing on the tragedy of it, there's guilt.
Yeah.
It really amplifies the guilt. But when I focus on the joy, the love gets amplified.
How much? The relationship.
The relationship that is. He actually got joy out of going to the cross because he loved it so much. And that's a good the other is, you don't throw that one out, but I think the joy is way better focused.
Way more powerful for the next, for Monday. Wednesday.
And for your next steps in your life.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to get to. If I focus on how guilty I was, that saps me a strength. The joy of the Lord is your strength.
It not only saps you, it drags you back.
Yeah.
When you focus on the wrong thing, you get drug into what you think about.
Yes, you absolutely do. That's a great point. Something that I would almost interrupt Scott and Lord Supper, and I realized I can do it here. All of the world's religious leaders, all of them, died. Moses died. And Muhammad died. Some of them died a peaceful death. Moses died a violent death, like Jesus. All of them have died, including Jesus. But Jesus did not die as a victim. He went to the grave not as a conqueror. He went to the grave as a mighty warrior. He overcame death and came out victorious. He didn't go that he went triumphant.
He forced them into crucifying him on the Passover.
And he forced them against their will. He forced their hand to fulfill prophecy. Yes, might come.
But just the difference
between other men losing their life. Jesus gave it.
Yeah.
He wasn't taken. He gave it up free. That's a big difference.
Yeah. He gave it up freely so they could enter that grave as a victorious, mighty warrior to conquer death for everybody who would follow. So, I think in that regard, I think of and I hate the one I use this illustration, but it's a true story. I had two bees when I was in Moscow. Two beehives in the backyard, right in the backyard, under the live tree. And I was gone for the day, and my little boy, well, he must have been 15, 14 months old, he just hollered right up in front of the beehive, right up to the front, in the middle of August, July, whatever, when it just was active as to be. And she heard him. Now the bees were on it, they weren't singing, and they were fine. Because he wasn't like that. But when he went to the rescue, waiting around to get the bees off, he was nailed mean. Now I don't know that it's an exact parallel, but her joy was seeing her little boy safe. And he walked right up to that. I won't walk up right to the front of the beehive. He did. Walk right up. Good morning, Friday. Hey, got him back in the house. But I got home later that day. And there they sat. One of them was covered with a little white spot that they considered a bee. But there was the love of a mother. There was the relationship of son and mother. But there was in her heart. A complete willingness to rescue. And I see that's what happened the night before the cross. You haven't seen me in a while. But one later you will see me. And it can be like a mother having a baby. You're going to grieve in my life. You might even grieve when I go away. And I will see you again. You will rejoice at the joy that nobody can take. Why can't we take your joy? I think when I think of that question, one, I think of what Paul talks about, that he was in prison because of the gospel, because of the gospel can't be in prison. They can shut me in a prison cell, but they can't shut the gospel. They can beat me, but they can't extinguish my relationship with God and my joy. Based not upon my physical, but upon my connection with God. I can go through the grist, you can go through the worst pain that I can go through with joy, because you're in the hands of a God who will not let anybody take you from death. No man is able to snatch you out of my Father's. And I want you to understand that your joy is based upon that relation. That's your confidence, that faithfulness to God. How has it shown up in your life? Let me do this before I ask that question. You've heard me do this before, but it's been several years. I think I get more frequently than that. But the word joy in the Greek word kala is a CH, the chi, although, but there's two other Greek words, important Greek words, that have the same root, the CHAR. Charis is grace. Eucharisteo is I am giving thanks. Kara. So think of the progression. Here is God's grace. What's grace? Is thank you again if you can't do it. Is that great?
Undeserved.
Faith. Undeserved. Faith. God giving, wanting to give what we need. Not necessarily what we want. But it's that attitude in God to give what we need. It's not an emotion, it's an attitude, it's a characteristic that inhabits God that causes him to give what we need. That's great. What's our response to receiving God's grace? Grateful. Great grace, grateful. You see the word, even in English, you see the word. So gratitude. Gratitude. Thanksgiving. And knowing that my God is the supplier of my needs and grateful for that, that produces joy. Kadesh. You kadesh te'o karam. And so gratitude is an important part of relationship, isn't it? The important part, see, we don't have a religion, we have a relationship, like God was saying. And that relationship is a recognition of my dependence upon Him and a gratitude for His willingness to supply what I need. And if I know that He's always going to supply what I need, what condition is there that is more powerful than Him? What is it that God cannot handle? He causes all things, and He said that in Romans 8. He said that to Christians who were being persecuted for their faith. We know, what is that, verse 18, we know that the thank you, but accurately, and verse 18, for I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with glory that is revealed, to be revealed to us. Whatever we're going to, it's just this pittance compared to the glory that's about to be revealed to us. And so, you're going through some rough stuff, he was saying to these Romans. The suffering of your present time. Don't let your mind compare them. Say, is it worth it for me to go? Yeah, it's absolutely worth it. Why is it absolutely worth it? Because it's in the hands of a grace-giving God. And I have this gratitude relationship with Him. And so I know whatever is coming is not bigger than Him. And He can take whatever it is. This is exciting. God can take whatever it is coming that is intended to hurt me and twist it around and make it to my good. He's able to do that. And therefore, bring it on. Now, joy is not being excited that it's coming on. It's that settled sense of well-being because I have a relationship with God. Somebody had a hand. Okay.
Question about that. Is character part of that family?
I don't think so. No, character is bad. It is. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It has to do with sand. Okay. A metal sand. You take a die and you hit it with the banner and it leaves them off. Okay. Yeah, Mary?
First thing
you said,
Christ, that's
right. Christ, no. That's a totally different word. It means anointed. Christ means anointed. Okay. So, where are we? No. What's going on in your life? Do you let what's going on in your life overshadow, overwhelm the sense of relationship where you're in, or where you want to give up? Joy is the answer to that. What I'm saying, that settled sense of well-being. I know I'm in the good hands of God, and this is not more powerful than God. You can always say that to yourself. What I'm going through right now is not more powerful than my God. Why do you want to say it positively? My God is more powerful than what I'm going through right now. And if I love Him, He's going to work it to my good. And what can you take out of that? God can take what's coming at me and work it to my good. Now, if it's not coming at me, it's kind of hard for Him to work it to my good, right? But if it is coming at me, then God's got this thing to work for my good. Go ahead.
Joy, this is what I was going to say earlier, joy as evidence of your relationship with God.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, all of the fruit of the Spirit is evidence. It's probably the best indicator It's the one thing that the enemy cannot counterfeit.
Wow.
He can counterfeit miracles. So miracles could be evidence. Joy, peace, patience is 100% of the time evidence of your relationship.
Okay. So the question on the board is, how is that working in your life? Are there things in your life that right now seem to overwhelm your sense of well-being? And if that's the case, what can you do? That's what we're talking about here, right? Are there things in your life that seem to be overwhelming, bringing you down, making you sad, feeling your focus, wondering about whether God really cares for you? I don't think I'm stepping on ground, but we haven't, from time to time, stepped on ourselves. Does God really care about me? He really don't. Why is this happening to me? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike. Or don't. The guy sitting behind.
Something that's really powerful in my life is I stopped asking why and started asking yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps restore my joy. I don't see things as random or let's fall into something like, okay, I'm here for whatever reasons. What do you want to be learning?
Mm-hmm.
What can I learn?
Yeah.
Adding to that you can it can be a tool, a barometer of your relationship, which then leads to that what?
Right.
If you're finding yourself struggling with any of the fruit of the Spirit, that could be an indication that maybe perhaps you're walking down the wrong path. And you need to, then there's prayer, or lead me to the path.
Thinking down the wrong.
Yes, lead me, Lord, to the right path.
Yeah. In the faith that Job had with his three friends, there was a younger person who was just tending to it all the time. Finally, they all said, all of them, there's nothing more they want to say. He said, I've got some things I need to say. And one of them says, nobody has asked, where is God my neighbor? You know, all accusing Job of being a sinner, and Job is accusing God of not caring. And now he says, why don't you ask, where is God my neighbor? What can I learn about God? Where is God in this piece of my life? The same question, only from the different facets. What is God going to do? Where is he? What's he doing here? At this point, not what's he doing here. If I find myself wanting to go this way, and I feel myself being drawn this way by the things God is doing, I can be an object God over the direction of my life. Right? And so, where is God? He's over here. I want to be with him. And so, humility is a really key part of having a life filled with joy. I'm yielding to, and I like what Jim Scott was saying, that an indication of maybe I'm not letting the Spirit bear the fruit in my life that he wants to bear. Why? Is the Spirit incapable, or am I resisting? Stephen said to the guys that were about stones that he said, you always resist the Holy Spirit just like your parents. And there is the ability to resist what God is doing. Takes humility to yield to, especially when it hurts. We are pain avoiding triggers.
in his nature. I want to avoid the pain rather than if God is taking me through the pain, maybe there's something to gain by the pain. What's that statement they have? No pain, no gain? Yeah. Some of us can't hear you yet.
I'm just saying that we're always going to have pain no matter what, but when it's worth the all of those New Year's today.
Yeah, and I like that. And we know it's worthwhile if the relationship with God is Romans 8:28. God causes all things to work together for good. If I know that, if I know that good is coming out of it, because I have that relationship with Him, I got joy. Now, that doesn't mean I have pleasure, and it doesn't mean I have happiness, it doesn't mean I'm elated, but it means I have a settled sense of well-being because I'm in the hands of God, out of whose hand nobody can take me. Except I can jump out because of the pain, I can jump out because of the circumstances. I don't want to do that. I want to stay with Him because if I am intentional about my relationship with Him, no matter what, I'm intentional about my relationship with you, Father, as long as you bring good things into my life. Things that are pleasant, things that are not. Or, I love you because who you are, and I'm with you no matter what. Then I'll have that settled sense of well-being. The peace. And there's peace that comes with that. Yeah. Other thoughts? Yeah, Michael.
It's always the important thing is not to there. The important factor with the joy we look at, because if you think of there's many aspects. One of the things we're just Marianne, I and Chris were talking about this morning and coming into 37. But I think if we were to look at the life of Joseph or the life of Moses, those that were in such a relationship of giants within the progress of God's purpose for the people, if you were to look at him as being cast out as being a murderer of the Moses and looking at him and you would not say that this guy's a Christian. This guy is a man of God who killed the Jew and he's got to go off for 40 years and be a shepherd. Yet God would use him in the condition that he was. Same thing, I'd like to just read the first four verses of Psalms 37, the Psalm of David. Says, do not get upset because of evildoers. Do not be envious of wrongdoers, for they will wither quickly like the grass, the decay like a green plant. Trust in the Lord and do good. Live in the land and cultivate patience. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. So many of us facing struggles financially, family-wise, health-wise, whatever the case being, it's that commitment, like you said, that joy within the heart that I serve a risen Savior and that I can trust in Him. But a lot of times you cannot have empathy unless you go through it and understand. And it's like the cultivation of God with the people to get the fine wine, you've got to go through the stomping of the grapes.
One of the reasons I love Romans 8:28 is how God has proven it doesn't matter how stupid I am or what stupid things I have done. The moment I release to God and to Him, He will cause something good to come. He will turn it around. No matter how disastrous my youth was, God made good my testimony. No matter how bad I mess up, when I yielded to God, I can release it and know that he will cause it together to come together for good, even if it's just to give me a present or he has my attention, to correct my action, or he'll always make something good come out of it when I realize what's going on and give it to him. And that gives me joy.
So says Yahweh, let not a wise man boast of his wisdom, let not a mighty man boast of his strength, let not a rich man boast of his riches, but let him who boast of this, that he understands and knows me, that I am Yahweh, who exercises loving kindness, justice, and righteousness. I delight in these things. You want to brag about something, brag about the relationship with him. And he yielded to his guidance. I don't want to say that. See, there's so many facets to this concept of joy. The bottom line facet is confidence in him. I trust him. I might not see where this thing is taking me, but I trust him. And therefore, I don't panic, and I have a settled sense of well-being. But I can leave that thought with you, settled sense of well-being, because of my relationship with God. But then there's the gratitude for it. Then there's humility to accept the correction and the redirection in my life. There's all of that, isn't it? And then there's the result, the expected result. This is going to make me a better person. I'm going to be better able to deal with life. I'm going to be stronger. I'm going to be more empathetic. I'm going to be a better witness for the glory of Jesus because of what I'm doing. And I trust God's day to do it. Jesus went through the cross. Father, into your hand, I commit my spirit, who for the joy set before him endured that. Okay. You see in Jesus the ultimate depiction of joy because it's the ultimate connection to the God of all grace. I suppose I really want to say, life happens. Like that. And we can't keep it from happening. Remember what Solomon said in the book of Ecclesiastes? Where the tree falls, that's where it lays. There's nothing I can do to change it. It fell, whatever. Can't wish it away. Life happens. How we bump ourselves into it. Are we bumping our heads, wish that hadn't happened? Horses are against me. The world hates me, and all this self-pity, or what can my God do with this? And you will be amazed and surprised how magnified in your mind God becomes. And you say, I wonder what he can do with this. I can't do nothing. I'm going to sit back and watch what he can do with this. That's that humility, and that's that yielding to and accepting. This is not a sign of his rejecting. This is a sign of his perfecting. That's pretty good. All this adversity is not proof of his rejection. It is a sign of his correction, which leads to my perfection. I love what Jim said about the hilltop experience. That's an experience I wouldn't wish on anybody's child. And yet, look what God gives you. You know what? As soon as you said that, I thought of AI. After Israel conquered Jericho, they became so cocky. I like that we don't need the whole 4 billion, we've got this little bitty count. And they got their tail kicked 2 or 3 times, didn't they? And Joshua came back and said, what's wrong? Well, they can't. You're a sinner, can't you have a picture? But then God took. Remember the sowing?
how that who has Joshua's truth fled from the people of Israel. And the third time was that after they got rid of the sin, they set an ambush. And they did the same thing. They were drawn out from the ambush. God used their mistake as a military strategy. He turned it to victory. God caused us all to be able to do it. And you see it in the history of God. So, I like the idea that you can rejoice in the difficulty you face because somehow God is making that appear in your life later on. Through the joy that before, there you go. And something beyond your cross, there you go. You have something beyond the difficulty because of your confidence in God that you can recall to you. Yes? I'm a God out of words. Let's close with them looking at Psalm 118. Psalm 118. And Mike, can you read for us?
Sure.
Let me find where I want to be this clear. Verse 15 to 29. That's half of it.
118 to 29.
Yeah.
Well, that song of salvation are the tenth of the right. The right hand of the Lord does valiant. The right hand of the Lord exalts. The right hand of the Lord does valiant. I shall not die, I shall live. Recount the deeds of the Lord. The Lord has disciplined me severely, but he has not given me over to death. Open to me the gates of righteousness that I may enter through them. Give thanks to the Lord. This is the gate of the and the righteous shall enter through it. I thank thee that we have that you have answered and have become my salvation. The stone that the rejectors, excuse me, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This is the Lord's will. This marvelous power. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in. Save us. We pray, O Lord. O Lord, we pray, give us success. Did you say 25?
29. End of that.
Okay. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. We bless you from the house of the Lord. The Lord is God, and he has made his light to shine upon us. Bind the festival sacrifice before up to the horn of the altar. You are my God, I will give you thanks. You are my God, I will extol you. I will give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. For his steadfast love endures forever.
Any thoughts on that reading? They're a real famous passage, you know, isn't it? This is the day the Lord has made, for this is good, and be glad in it. I have one question for you. What day is he talking? The day that the stone became the corner. See? It's not every night like this is what this is Sunday, February 22. And you're like, oh, this is the day, Lord. And this is not the day he's talking. He's talking about the day he put Jesus as the foundation stone of the temple. That he's done. That he's done a thing that he's done. What did you say? Let us rejoice. Rejoice. And be glad in it. You see, what we have from God is this eternal foundation of Jesus Christ. That no matter what comes, I was persecuted severely. But I'm giving thanks. No matter what comes, we have this eternal foundation Jesus. And as an eternal foundation, we have a settled sense of well-being. That's what it is. Would you read the Bible?